have lost the way. We as poets vacated the world. Hate. We think too much and feel too little. We think too much and feel too little. More than sheep, humanity and cleverness and violence. All will be lost. Do not despair. The hate of him will pass and dictate a sky. A power they took from the people who return to the people. Return to the people.
Let us all unite. Just wait for a new world to do with greed. Now just wait to free the world. To fulfill the promise. Let us all unite.
Welcome, folks. You're in the Corporation Nation. It's September 4th. It's a Thursday, 2015. Very, very, very excited to announce that Michael Cremo is joining us today. Michael is the Forbidden Archaeologist. His books, Forbidden Archaeology, My Science, My Religion, Human Devolution, which is the exciting sequel to Forbidden Archaeology, as well as a few others that we'll talk about today. You can go to mcremo.com, that's C-R-E-M-O, and forbiddenarchaeology.com, and a few other websites that you'll find. With that, let me say welcome and thank you so much. Very honored to join in. Oh, Michael, okay, well, shoot, I was just talking to him. Okay,
thanks for great intro.
Yeah, well, you're used to that should be no silence there. You know, to read all of amazing evidence for why you are the premier voice in this particular subject. I'd certainly welcome that. But I think information is so important that we should just get right into it. What do you say?
Sure, let's do it.
Well, let's start with Darwin, because, you know, in the beginning, which was 1859, was the origin of species, and lots of scientists said it was suddenly good. And then Michael Cremo comes along and says, well, wait a minute, that's not so good. So what exactly happened with Darwin and his theories, and how did it permeate the entire scientific community?
Well, what Darwin did, in the words of some of his supporters, was make it possible to how human beings and other species could have come into existence without the need for bringing God into there at all. So what they basically did is they made it possible to give a purely material explanation for it and follow Darwin. Give very materialistic answers to the questions, who are we and where did we come from? And that our whole worldwide human civilization has taken a very materialistic turn. They tell us we are just machines made of molecules in competition with each other for survival. And they're able to enforce this idea because governments all over the world have given them an exclusive monopoly in the educational institutions and scientific institutions, even though there are scientists who are proposing different alternatives. There are scientists proposing intelligent design, scientists proposing various kinds of creation theories. And you'd have to put me in that number. I don't accept the Darwinian theory of evolution. And there's a lot of reasons for that. I think there contradicts it. And I think the effects of the theory being imposed on people are not always good. I think they've given a very materialistic set of answers to the important question, who am I and where come from? And be that, I think our whole worldwide human civilization has taken a very materialistic turn. Most people think produce and consume more and more material things is the main purpose of human life. And because of that, you know, this ever-increasing process of material production, consumption, generates huge amounts of wealth which flow into certain pockets in an unequal way. And there are powerful, I believe, economic, political, and social interests that would like to keep things like that, which I think is the reason for the intense opposition to the presentation of any alternative ideas. I think there's intense opposition to that because they would realize if these alternative ideas, which generally involve some kind of higher intelligence being involved in the origin of life in the universe, if those ideas were to become more prominent in human society, it would disturb a lot of the political and financial arrangements that are now in place.
Well, we live in a what you might call a consensus society, especially in academia and the institutions of science, and so the consensus seems to revolve around Darwin's theories specifically, and that of course makes any challenger like yourself looked at as an alien, something that's not well in academic circles. And I know you've had a lot of experiences with that. comes to funny stories where you are invited to speak and then at the last minute canceled because of the notion that you're going against the consensus theory out there, which what I find really interesting is some of the quotes I've seen by, you know, respected scientists and archaeologists that say, hey, if this guy's theories, this guy's evidence, the primary evidence that he's putting forth, were to be put out there, it would change the entire scientific community. We have to rethink everything. We can't have that, can we?
Yeah, there are some scientists who've recognized that. One of them was one of the architects of the current Darwinian consensus on human origins, the idea that humans like us have evolved from more primitive ape-like creatures. The idea that humans like us didn't exist before about 200,000 years ago, the idea that there are only different kinds of ape men before that. One of the architects of this current dominant consensus was the late William Howells, who was an anthropologist working at Harvard University. When my book, Forbidden Archaeology, first came out in the 1990s, he got a copy of it. And he read it, and he said, well, just pretty what you just said, that if this evidence were to be taken seriously, it would be touching not only to our current scientific theories of human origins, it would be damaging to the whole theory of evolution itself. And I plead guilty to that charge. Yes, I think he understood what the implications of the kind of evidence that I documented in my book, Forbidden Archaeology, really are.
Well, you've been invited to speak many, many very prestigious institutions, the World Archaeological Conference, the Royal Institution in London, the Russian Academy of Science in Moscow, the Indian Institute of Science in Bangladesh, all the way on down the line to little radio shows like mine, and you spoke up in Toronto to the conspiracy culture folks at the bookstore up there. You get invited to a lot of places, and obviously, as I said, funny story, you end up sometimes being canceled the last minute and then accepted somewhere else, which is funny. Of course, that attracts a lot of people who want to know why you were canceled. If I were to ask you, Michael, how old is the human species, the answer I'd expect from an honest man would be, I don't know. But with you, you can actually say, I don't know, but I have this evidence. So how old, my friend, is the human species, would you interject?
Well, I would say human beings have been around since the beginning of the history of life on Earth on this planet. Now, people may have different ideas about how old the Earth is. You know, some people favor a very young age, 10,000 years or less. Others feel the Earth is a couple billion years old. I would say whatever age that you attach to the Earth, humans have been around since the beginning. We didn't evolve from apes. And I think there's a lot of archaeological evidence in the form of scientific reports of discoveries of human bones, human artifacts, human footprint that go much further back in time than the current scientific consensus allows. I mean, the current scientific consensus is the first humans like us appeared less than 200,000 years ago. But if you go through the scientific literature itself, you're going to find many reports of scientists actually discovering human bones, human artifacts, human footprints going back millions of years. Now, you may ask, well, why is this evidence in the current textbooks? I think it's because of a process of knowledge filtration that operates in the world of science. If you've got reports of discoveries that support the dominant consensus, as you put it, such evidence will make its way into the textbooks. You'll hear scientists speaking about it at their conferences. But if you've got evidence that radically contradicts the dominant consensus, it tends to be filtered out. That means it gets set aside, forgotten, sometimes dismissed on very flimsy grounds. Things like that happen. And I call it a process of knowledge filtration.
So
you don't see this evidence in the current textbooks, but it's there in the original scientific groups.
Right, and so what you've done, so basically what you're saying in the scientific method is a window, and the knowledge filtration system replaces it, and anything that looks to be too old just gets tossed out the window because we have a consensus that life is only this old. As far as the evidence...
Let me give an example. I mean, just from very recently, just this year. I mean, this is a tiny thing, but it's just an example of how this knowledge filtering process operates. Earlier this year, scientists reported finding a finger bone in a place called Uduai Gorge in Africa, where many discoveries have been made. And in their scientific report, they say this finger bone is exactly like that of a modern human being. It's different from any kind of chimpanzee finger bone or baboon, chimpanzee or baboon or gorilla finger bone. It's even different from different kinds of ape man kinds of finger bones. It's exactly like a modern human finger bone. The problem is it's found in layers of rock that have been dated as being 1,840,000 years old. So in their scientific report, the scientists who discovered these finger bones say, well, it's like that of modern human finger bone, but it could be Homo sapiens because Homo sapiens just didn't exist 1,840,000 years ago. So it just shows you how this knowledge filtering process operates. They're just absolutely convinced humans like us couldn't have existed back at that time. So this couldn't possibly be a Homo sapiens finger bone, even though they say it's exactly like it. So,
well, let's discuss the notion of the difference between so primary research versus secondary type of research. Whereas Darwin's research was very, to say the least, was very speculative and could not be called a primary research. Although he did some interesting studies, it could not be called a primary research in his actual conclusion. So what's the difference between what you did in your book, which is to collect a bunch of primary research and put it all together, versus the notion of secondary or secondhand information, which seemed to be what the scientific community and archaeological community modeled their findings on?
Yeah, well, you're raising an important point there when you're talking about the technicalities of the kind of research that I do. Basically, what I'm doing is I'm researching the scientific literature. In the scientific literature exists two categories, primary and secondary. By the primary scientific literature, I mean original reports by archaeologists, geologists, paleontologists, other scientists who are digging into the earth and reporting what they're finding in their peer-reviewed professional scientific journals. That's what I mean by primary scientific literature, original reports by scientists actually digging into the earth and publishing the results in their professional scientific publications. By secondary literature, I mean literature that is based on the primary scientific literature. Now, what often happens is the authors of secondary literature, the textbooks, for example, they're very selective in what they include in their work. Because they're influenced by the dominant consensus, as you put it, which is the Darwinian evolutionary consensus these days, they tend to include in their textbooks, in their secondary literature, only the reports from the primary literature that fit their consensus idea. And when people open up those textbooks, they're not aware that they're only getting a selective presentation of the evidence. They're thinking, okay, I'm opening up this textbook. It's presenting Darwinian theory of evolution, all the facts from the primary scientific literature that are included in this book support the theory, therefore the theory must be true. The problem is these secondary texts supporting the Darwinian theory of evolution, including all the relevant facts. So in my book, Forbidden Archaeology, I collected not just the reports that support the Darwinian theory of evolution, but the reports that contradict it, so that people would have that complete set of facts on which to base their conclusion about whether this Darwinian theory of evolution is true or false. I think if you consider all the reported evidence and not just the carefully selected evidence that is included in today's textbooks, I think if a person considers all that evidence, they will come to the conclusion that the Darwinian theory of evolution is not true and that we need new explanations, especially for human origin.
Yeah, it's just amazing. You base a lot of your opinions on the notion of the Vedas, the Vedic text. I wonder if you could sort of tell us why you find that so compelling.
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, I'd like to say I have a great deal of respect for all the great spiritual traditions of the world, take very seriously what they all have to say. But as I was growing up, and my father was a military intelligence officer, and that meant a couple of things for me as I was growing up. One thing it meant was our family was moving a lot in the United States and around the world, so I got exposed to a lot of different cultures and worldviews as I was growing up. And among them was the spiritual culture of India, and that culture is based on texts which are collectively called the Vedas. And Veda is a Sanskrit word, it means knowledge. So among the Vedic texts that I looked at were a group called the Puranas, which means histories. And in these histories, I found accounts of human populations that had existed since the very beginning of the history of life on Earth. And this was something quite different than anything I had learned from my teachers in high school or university. Of course, this idea that humans have existed since the beginning of life on Earth is something that's found not just in the Vedas, it's found in the Bible, it's found in the Quran. They all have, all of these ancient spiritual texts have as one of their main ideas the idea that humans have been placed here at the beginning, whether it's Adam and Eve or some other personalities. This idea is found in common in a lot of spiritual traditions on this planet, this idea that humans have been here since the beginning. We didn't evolve from apes and monkeys. As I said, it's an idea that's not unique to the Vedas, but it's found in the Bible and other traditions as well. So that got me thinking about what I had been hearing from my teachers in high school and university, and I began to wonder, well, what about this idea of extreme human antiquity that is found in these ancient texts? Are these accounts to be taken as simply mythological, with no factual basis, or is there perhaps some factual basis for this idea of what I call extreme human antiquity? So that's what got me looking into the history of archaeology. When I looked into the current textbooks of archaeology, I didn't see any evidence for extreme human antiquity, but I decided I'm going to look beyond the textbooks, because that's another thing I got from growing up in a military family, with my father being a military intelligence officer and growing up among people in the intelligence services. The idea that there is such a thing as hidden knowledge, there is such a thing as secret knowledge, things that most people aren't aware of. You have to penetrate beyond what's being presented to the general public as the absolute truth. So that's what got me looking into the entire history of archaeology. Now, I didn't know what I was going to find when I went into that research. I thought, okay, maybe I'll find a few interesting facts. I'll write a short article about it and move on to something else. As I said, dig in to the original scientific literature on archaeology from the time of Darwin all the way up to the present, and not just in English, but in many different languages. I have a reading knowledge of most of the major European languages. So when I started digging into these rare, out-of-print, hard-to-find publications, I began finding one after another that reported discoveries of human bones and artifacts and human footprints. And one report led to another. So my 8 days of research turned into 8 weeks. The 8 weeks turned into 8 months. The 8 months turned into 8 years of research. And I found hundreds of cases of scientific reports human bones, human artifacts, and human footprints going back many millions of years in some cases. And I collected them all in my book, Forbidden Archaeology, which is about 900 pages long. So that's what got me into the research. You were asking how the ideas I encountered in the Vedas influenced me. And as I said, these are ideas that are not found just in the Vedas. They're in the Bible, they're in the Quran, they're in other texts as well. And I think there is a great deal of scientific evidence that supports the idea of extreme human antiquity, the idea that humans like us did not evolve from apes and monkeys. We've been here since the beginning in our current form.
Very nice. We're talking to Michael Cremo today. You can go to mcremo.com or from archaeology.com and the several books we're referencing today. We're going to take a very, very quick break. I want to remind people you can join us in the chat room, which is corporationnation.chatango.com. That's corporationnation.chatango.com. We're back. Stay tuned, folks.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Events have shown just how vulnerable we are to dead viruses, bacteria, and fungus. These diseases are all caused by infectious pathogens that often get the upper hand on conventional medical treatments. Now more than ever, there's a great need for a product that will help protect us. Look no further. Supernatural Silver can provide immune system support to help fight off these deadly pathogens. Supernatural Silver is a new and vastly improved type of silver solution that's safe and extremely effective against 143 types of bacteria, both forms of viruses, mold, and yeast. Supernatural Silver can be taken orally or used topically and can be used in a nebulizer or vaporizer for inhalation. With over 180 scientific studies by independent universities, hospitals, and research institutions, Supernatural Silver is a powerful weapon against disease. Go to supernaturalsilver.com and use the promo code SILVER2018 for 20% off your entire order. Give you and your loved ones a fighting chance with Supernatural Silver.
Come to Finca Baiano, a small community in Panama, which is being established for people who believe that a future crisis may be difficult to survive in North America after a collapse of the system. Go to buganima.com for more information. There is limited space for 100 people only. Go to bugoutpanama.com to immigrate as long as you can. Prepare. Don't despair at bugoutpanama.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here is what people are saying.
A year ago, I was realizing that I was in serious problems with my heart. You know, I had these chest pains and so on. I realized that I had to do something and quick. I didn't want to go the medical route. So I started in doing investigating, and somebody told me about these heart drops. I got on the heart drops prescribed dosage. Within 2 weeks, I immediately started seeing the results. This is working. I'm going to stick with it. I can't deny the fact that when I got on the heart drops initially, there was immediate help, an immediate turnaround.
To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Your money, what is it worth today? A $100 bill in 1913 is worth only $2 today. So now, your money is just about worth, and the Fed will continue printing more and more of it. But what if you could turn it around, $1 time, and make your money worth more than it is now? How? By acquiring gold before your paper money is totally worthless. But how can you afford gold at today's prices? By buying it 1 gram at a time. And this is so important because gold is the future. For as little as $65, you can begin trading your almost worthless currency for something real. Something you can hold. Carat bars, which keep their value, can be stored securely, and are easily accessible. Just like a savings account, but a savings account backed by your gold. Carat Bars International, a savings account you can count on. For more information, please click on Carat Bar banner ad at republicbroadcasting.org. Again, that's the Carat Bars banner ad at republicbroadcasting.org. And start saving now.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there's only one, Pure Effect Ultra. It features advanced anti-radiation technology and is constantly rated 5 stars as the number one system for reduction of fluoride, drug and chemtrail residues, heavy metals, and more. It raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and provides virtually instant clean water on demand, all while using no electricity. Want to learn more? Visit PureEffectFilters.com. That's PureEffectFilters.com.
It is like a finger pointing away to the moon. Don't concentrate on the finger or you will miss all that heavenly glory.
Empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. Like water. Like water. Like water. Like water. Water can flow or it can crash. Be water, my friend. Running water never goes stale, so you gotta just keep on flowing. Keep on.
Alrighty, folks, welcome back. Here in the Corporation Nation, we're talking to Michael Primo today, the Forbidden Archaeologist. Love that nickname. His book, of course, the Forbidden Archaeology. Your follow up to that book, Michael, is Human Devolution, a Vedic alternative to Darwin's theory. And I, since we started out with Darwin, I suppose we should, what do you mean by human devolution?
Well, you know, Forbidden Archaeology, I presented evidence that contradicts the current Darwinian explanation of human origins, namely that we all fairly recently from more primitive ape creatures. And if they're interested in the alternative I'm proposing, well, they can see this other book. Because people did ask me, you know, after Forbidden Archaeology came out, okay, you've got all this evidence that contradicts the current theory. So to answer that question, I wrote the book Human Devolution, a Vedic alternative to Darwin's theory. And basically what I said there was, before we even ask the question, where did human being come from, we should first of all ask the question, what is a human being? Now today, most scientists are going to tell you, you are just a machine made of molecules. That's all that you are. You're a purely material being that came about by purely materialistic processes. And as far as mind and consciousness are concerned, well, those things are just temporary byproducts of bioelectrical activity in the brain, molecules interacting in the brain. And they would say, okay, when at the time of death, the molecules in the brain stop interacting, then there's no more consciousness, no more mind. There's nothing that survives the death experience in terms of your consciousness and personality. Well, I don't accept those ideas. I think there is a conscious self that exists apart from matter. It has its own independent existence. And I would say that's what we really are. We are conscious selves that have somehow or other come in contact with matter. I don't think matter produces consciousness. I think consciousness has its own independent existence. I would say consciousness is a symptom of a soul, an eternal soul. But to put it in scientific terms, I would say consciousness has its own independent existence apart from matter. And what happens is somehow or other that conscious self comes in contact with matter and becomes covered by matter. So that in terms of our identity as conscious selves, we do not evolve up from matter, as most scientists now say. Rather, we devolve or come down from what I call the level of pure consciousness into the world of matter, where the conscious self becomes covered by matter. And that's what I mean by devolution, the process by which the pure conscious self becomes covered by and limited by matter and material energies. But it's a process that can be reversed, and consciousness can be restored to its original pure state. And I think all the great religions of the world have some processes by which that can be affected, whereby consciousness can be restored to its original pure state, its state of grace, if you want to put it in religious terms, or if you want to just say restore to a state of original pure consciousness, you could express it that way. So in my book, Human Devolution, I give scientific evidence showing that the conscious self can exist apart from the body, apart from the brain, apart from matter. This evidence comes from, for example, medical studies of out-of-body experiences or near-death experiences, as they're sometimes called. And I have a lot of other scientific evidence, you know, for the existence of the subtle mind element with its unusual powers like telepathy and psychokinesis. So basically, that's what my book, Human Devolution, is about. That is, individual conscious selves, we are not produced by matter. We don't evolve from matter, as the supporters of the Darwinian theory of evolution would have us believe. Rather, we have come down as pure conscious selves from some higher level of reality, which is our real home, and we have somehow or other come in contact with matter, but it's a process that can be reversed, and that process of devolution can be reversed. There can be a revolution of consciousness, or revolution of consciousness, if you want to put it that way.
It certainly seems that science is more concentrated in government circles anyway on, as you called it, knowledge filtration in case of drugs and all the things that are being put into the food supply and everything else, there's obviously evidence to show I suppose what I'm trying to say is they wouldn't be dumbing us down through these secondary sources of education and other means, chemically, most importantly, if there wasn't something to be said about your theory.
Well, I think you're right. This process of knowledge filtration operates in a lot of different areas. You know, once I was speaking at a university that happened to be in South Africa, and it was a time when the students were on vacation, so my audience was about 100, 150 professors from different departments in the university. So I gave a talk about my book, Forbidden Archaeology, and I also spoke about how the knowledge filtering process operates in archaeology. So afterwards, you know, I was kind of standing in the lobby, and a professor kind of came up to me, kind of looked around, made sure nobody else was listening, and he was saying to me, you know, I'm very happy that you brought up this topic of knowledge filtration, because it's happening not just in archaeology, it's happening in my field, physics, kind of talked about a little bit and walked away. Then another professor walked up to me with pretty much the same thing. You know, he kind of looked around, said, I'm glad you brought up this topic of knowledge filtration. It's operating in my field, chemistry, and let me tell you about it. So it is something that happens a lot. And I think the reason it happens only is that most of the alternatives to the current way of thinking, either scientifically or politically or culturally, involve some higher spiritual principle, some idea of God, some idea of the soul, of something non-material involved in our origins. And this is very much opposed to the whole trend of modern science and education and politics and culture over the last few centuries, where we've seen everything become more purely secular and materialistic and simply focused on material production and consumption, generating huge amounts of wealth, which is controlled by certain financial and political interests, and there's tremendous pressure to keep things like they are and not let these alternatives become dominant in society, because that would just wreck the whole system that's been set up for us these days, where we are supposed to be purchasing certain pharmaceuticals, we're supposed to be believing certain theories and acting in certain ways.
This goes to the word epistemology. Why don't you explain why that doesn't seem to be happening?
Well, epistemology means how we know things. You know, what is real, what is knowable, and how do we know it? So I think a lot of the alternative ideas, and especially the kinds of ideas that I'm presenting, are based on a different epistemological principle, a different set of ideas about what is real, what's knowable, and how it should be known. Most scientists today are very resistant to the idea that there's anything beyond the chemical elements. They don't accept that there's a soul. They don't accept that there's a mind element that really exists. They don't like anything connected with that. Neither do they idea that there's some higher intelligence that has anything to do with how this universe is structured. So my ideas and the ideas of others, intelligent design theorists, for example, supporters of different Christianist ideas, have a different set of ideas about what is real and what is knowable and how it should be known. So the fact is, however, that the supporters of the more materialistic ideas have convinced governments to give them a monopoly in the tax-supported educational systems around the world, this country and other countries. So I think if all of this is going to change, one thing that has to end is the government-enforced monopoly that the supporters of the Darwinian theory of evolution have been given in the education systems around the world. Now, we've got so many problems these days, financial and political problems, that maybe this isn't the primary focus in a lot of people's minds. But eventually, I think if things are going to change, you have to go to the root. And I think the root of it is the answers to the questions, who am I and where did I come from? If our education systems are going to continue telling us we're just machines made of molecules in competition with each other for survival, then I don't think our cultural and political institutions are going to change very much.
And we'll act the part.
Root.
Yeah, we'll act the part if that's what we're told and convinced is the case, too. Damn spirituality, basically. Basically, what you're talking about here is the notion of tenure and being funded for your projects, and of course your findings can't really disagree with the opinions or the interests of who is funding you, and that is a very, very big problem. Tell us about a gentleman, real quick, got 2 minutes, named Rainer Proch.
Well, this has to do with some discoveries that were made in Ulduvai Gorge early in the 20th century. There was a German scientist named Hans Reck who found a human skeleton solidly embedded in upper bed 2 of Ulduvai Gorge. And he said the skeleton was solidly embedded in these layers of rock. He had to take it out with a hammer and chisel. It turns out that the layers of rock in which this skeleton was solidly embedded were over 1 million years old. Now, that's the current scientific age for upper bed 2 of Ulduvai Gorge. Bed 2 is between 1.1 and 1.7 million years old. So it was a very controversial discovery because most scientists don't believe that humans like us existed at that time. We hadn't evolved yet, according to the Darwinian theory of evolution. So they were looking for some way to dismiss this discovery. So Rainer Proch was a German scientist. He's still living, I believe. And he did what's called some radiocarbon dating on a fragment of bone that he said was from the original skeleton discovered by Hans Reck early in the 20th century. So he got a radiocarbon age, a carbon-14 age of less than 10,000 years for this fragment of bone. And many people thought, okay, that really settles it. It's been scientifically proven that this skeleton is not over 1 million years old. It's less than 10,000 years old.
Right. And then something very interesting happened with his research, and we'll talk about that when we return from this quick break. Stay tuned, folks.
Nice shooting. Hey, that's a sweet AK-47 chest rig. Is that multicam?
Yep, got it from StrikeHardGear.com.
Strike what?
StrikeHardGear.com.
Set your sights on StrikeHardGear.com. Tough, tactical gear for your Soviet-style weapon that's made in the USA. Affordable, plus a no-questions-asked 30-day money-back guarantee and lifetime replacement warranty. StrikeHardGear.com. Go ahead, pull the trigger.
This is a public announcement. Be ready to copy down a website address at the end of this message. First off, a big thank you to people from Oregon, California, New York, Maine, Connecticut, Saskatchewan, Canada. People are logging on to landho.tv and they are purchasing land in the United States in sunny New Mexico for as low as $350 down and $99 a month. In 1 year, you own the land. These are usable parcels in a development that can only be worth more money in the years to come. Similar lots in the same development have sold for up to $15,000. So it really is a no-brainer. Visit landho.tv to purchase yours today via PayPal. Other mainstream investments are good, but they sit in a vault. Land remains a true investment that you can use while it can increase in value. Current land prices are already going up, and this commercial could be pulled at any time, so you must act fast, because when these properties are gone, they're gone. 50 down, 99 a month. Landho.tv. LANDHO.TV. Right now.
The IRS is a private corporation, not a government agency. Income tax is collected by voluntary compliance. To learn to unvolunteer or discontinue volunteering into the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com and immediately implement Strategy 1. The process must be repeated each and every time. Paper, letter, envelope, presentment, etc. Always and forever. Failure equates to acceptance, subsequent result in contract, and you pay or go to jail by your own consent and agreement contract. Avoid recontracting. Visit escapeharassment.com and implement Strategy 1 immediately. Bar lawyers and accountants won't help you. Why wait? Get Strategy 1 and immediately implement it to divorce the IRS today and forever. It's escapeharassment.com Strategy 1 to be free from the IRS. Escapeharassment.com.
Come to Finca Baiano, a small community in Panama, which is being established for people who believe that a future crisis may be difficult to survive in North America after a collapse of the system. Go to bugoutpanama.com for more information. There is limited space for 100 people only. Go to bugoutpanama.com to immigrate as long as you can. Prepare. Don't despair at bugoutpanama.com.
Is this real? Or is this just a ride?
World is like a ride. You think it's real? It's just a ride. We can change it anytime we want. It's only the choice between fear and love. The world is like a ride. You think it's real? It's just a ride. We can change it anytime we want. It's only the choice between
fear and love. Welcome back here in the Corporation Nation. We're talking to Michael Cremo. Sorry we had to cut you off there for a second. Right approach. So he officially states that his data on the carbon studies of the bone fragments were officially only how many years old?
About 10 to 12,000 years old. This was from a skeleton that had been discovered early in the 20th century by the German scientist Hans Reck at Olduvai Gorge. He found it solidly embedded in upper bed 2 of Olduvai Gorge in East Africa. And that formation is over 1 million years old. So it appeared there was a human skeleton, an anatomically modern human skeleton, over 1 million years old, which completely contradicts the current Darwinian theories of human origins and antiquity. They would say the first human like us appeared less than 200,000 years ago. So it was a very controversial discovery, and scientists were doing anything they could to discredit this discovery because it contradicted the dominant theory. So Rainer Proch did a radiocarbon date on a fragment of bone he said was from the original skeleton, and he got an age of less than 12,000 years for it. And everybody thought, okay, now it's finally been shown. This evidence doesn't contradict theory of evolution. It fits squarely within what's allowed by the theory of evolution. So they thought, okay, this Rainer Proch has done a really good job in showing this. But it later turned out there were two problems. First of all, this date was done in the 1970s. and Rex skeleton had been lost during World War II. The museum it was in had been bombed, and the skeleton had been destroyed or lost. So the little fragment of bone that Reiner procreated might not have been from the skeleton itself. That's one problem. Another problem was that Reiner Proch was forced to resign from his position at Frankfurt University after an academic court there found he had been guilty of falsifying dozens of radiocarbon dates during his long career. So I would say this radiocarbon date done by this Reiner Proch does not discredit the original dating of the skeleton that was done by Hans Reck, who found it solidly embedded in deposits that modern geologists tell us are over a million years old.
Well, this seems to be as the guys that were coming up to you at the conference said, this seems to be a reoccurring thing throughout all the industries. I know the former editor of the Lancet magazine just came out and said that about half of the studies that they produce in the Lancet are also falsified just so they can get the drugs on the market. So that was an official statement. So seems to be a commonality among these folks. Take a really, really quick 2-minute break. We'll be back.
Thank you.